Welcome back to part two, my fellow peanuts. Now, I realised that the last episode gave you a lot of a backstory into Donald Gaskins, but there was so much to share about him before he started murdering. Now, this podcast covers true crime cases that may not be suitable for young listeners. There may be graphic and violent content. Listener discretion is advised. I am going to warn everybody once again, this is a trigger warning in regards to sexual assault. Now, Donald had vowed never to return to prison. And I think that's why he started murdering his victims, to stop them from identifying him. So once he was out of prison, he'd settle in a little place called Sumter in South Carolina. He'd go back to work in construction during the week, and he'd be performing some illegal activities on the weekends, like stripping stolen cars. But he also liked to go to bars looking for sex. Now, during this period of his life, this is where the bothersome feelings would start getting really bad. Now, he would describe these feelings as starting in his balls, up his spine, through his stomach, and then settle in his head right behind his eyes. Now, this would cause some actually really bad migraines. And during these migraines, he began to start to hear voices that would tell him to rape, kill, and maim. Now, guys, I alluded to before in my previous episode that I thought there was a possible mental illness. Now, hearing voices, those migraines, definitely needed some type of evaluation, surely, at this time in his life, considering these were voices in his head. He would soon start driving up and down the coastal highway from Myrtle Beach to Savannah. Now, he would later say that it was like he was looking for something special on them highways, only he really didn't know what. Now, Donald broke his killings into two types: the coastal killings, so where he would kill hitchhikers and people he didn't know. So we're going to talk about the coastal killings at the moment, but there are another type that he referred to as serious murders. Now, these would be people he knew, and they would be such serious wrongdoings, such as revenge or rejection. So there was a personal element to his serious murders. I know exactly what Donald was looking for: an easy victim to kill. Now, from what I have read, the women he killed were reflections of the women that rejected him. Now, this isn't the first time I've heard of a serial killer doing this. Ted Bundy comes to mind. He was originally rejected by his fiancée, Stephanie, and his murder victims reflected what she looked like. So it's not the first time we're sort of hearing about that revenge for rejection. Now, he would give in to his need for killing. He'd pick a girl up by the name of Angie. Now, I'm not really sure that this is her real name, but let's leave it at that and call her Angie for now. Now, shortly after picking her up, Donald would proposition her for sex. She actually laughed in his face. This would prove to be a fatal mistake. Her rejection filled Donald with rage, in which he would beat Angie unconscious before raping her. And he would honestly do some of the most vile things, and he'd truly fulfill all those sadistic fantasies he'd been having. Now, he would torture and mutilate her body before killing her. And Donald said something truly repulsive in his book, which was Final Truth, The Autobiography of a Serial Killer. "All I could think about is how I could do anything I wanted to her." It takes a really sick individual to be this perverse, but he was only just starting at the moment. Now, he knew that she couldn't be found alive, or she'd tell the police and be able to identify him. So he sunk her body with weights into a nearby river, stole money from her. By the way, what is a big killer stealing from their victims? And then once he was done, he threw the rest of her belongings in the river beside her. There's a lot of conflicting information around his killings along the coastal highway. None of the bodies have ever been found or confirmed. Now, he would say that he'd kill anywhere between every 6 to 8 weeks during 1969, which was during the time of his coastal killings. Yet in his book, he would actually say he had an overpowering need to kill by the 10th of every month, which indicates to me that he had an OCD tendency. Just food for thought. But I'm not really sure you can believe everything you've read and watched about Gaskins. He was a really good liar, and he was a storyteller. I don't doubt that he killed more people than what he was convicted for. I'm just not sure it's as many as 100. But you do really never know these things. And given that Henry Lucas lied about the number of victims he'd murdered, maybe we should just err on the side of caution and come up with an even 50, right? Either way, he killed people. He was not a good person. And it honestly didn't matter to Donald if the victim was male or female. And this is what I've alluded to on my previous episode. He was done so wrong by, in his formative years, males and females. But you know what? I do still find it really strange because, as evident with most serial killers, it's usually one or the other, unless they're actually partial to couples. Now, he has mentioned on numerous times that killing, it gave him a sense of power, which is another sign of a serial killer, right? But given the lack of control over most of his childhood, I imagine that this would have been one of the first times he had control and he had power. However, he did do something very unusual. He would change his method of killing. So he wasn't partial to one type of killing. Quite the variety, which included stabbing, suffocating, torture, mutilation, and cannibalism, or so he claims. Now, this could be why the police failed to see a pattern with the victims and a manner of death. If you've got so many different ways that people are dying, or the fact that the bodies couldn't be found. Now, it is hard to know if this claim is true, but Donald said that he would sometimes eat his victims and force them to eat parts of themselves. True or not, for me, that's becoming incredibly sadistic. Before I return to the timeline that I did show you at the end of episode one, I do just want to say a couple of things. Given all the pain and suffering that Donald had endured as a child and throughout the years, I do find it really difficult to read and listen to the amount of pain and suffering he would cause to people himself. Like, surely wouldn't you learn from the amount of pain that you went through and not want to put and inflict that onto another person? I find it all very odd and strange. I watched a documentary on him as well, and it actually showed his daughter and her experiences. Now, it was his daughter, Shirley, and she would comment that he was a really good dad. He was loving, he was understanding, and he always wanted what was best for her. He definitely had two sides to his personality. I think the hatred for women for sure began with his mum, who, let me be frank, we can understand that. And the growing hate from men stemmed from his mum's Johns, his stepfather, boss boys, and power men. So I do see how he wasn't partial to killing either gender. I do see it, but it's just really, it's an odd occurrence for me. Now, the following murders are what Donald described as the serious murders, where he would know the victim and have a reason to kill them. And when I say this, he was an incredibly petty man, so the reasons behind killing, we wouldn't do that. What I want to say about this timeline is that these are the bodies that have been found and identified, but not all of these victims he was convicted of killing. But he did confess, he just wasn't charged. Now we're going to start with Janice Kirby, who happened to be his 15-year-old niece, and her friend, Patricia Allsbrook. Now, Donald would say prior to killing his niece, he'd had previous thoughts about raping her, but the opportunity didn't come up until 1970. Now, while he was at a bar drinking, he saw the girls and he offered them a ride home as they were quite drunk, and they were way too trusting and drunk at the time that they willingly accepted the offer. But it didn't take them very long to realise their mistake. Now, when the girls noticed he wasn't driving them home, they did dare to ask why. Now, he told them in a very caring manner that they needed to stop by his house so they could sober up before going home and clean up a little bit. Janice had actually just recently thrown up on herself, so he thought it would be best to maybe clean up. Now, once they arrived at his home, this is when the real horror began. Soon after arriving, Janet would pass out. Now, he'd used this opportunity to flash Patricia his penis. She was disgusted and ran away from him. Now, unfortunately for her, he was really quick and was able to catch up to her. These two girls would fight with everything they had. He would first hold a gun at Patricia to keep her in place while he attempted to rape Janice while she was passed out. She would ultimately wake her up. That would ultimately wake her up, right? And she would struggle and fight against him. Now, Patricia used this opportunity to grab the nearest thing that she had. Now, that happened to be a lamp, and she smashed it over his head. They made a run for it. This would prove to be futile as he'd catch up again. And he dragged them back to the house where he held both girls at gunpoint. Janice attempted to escape again. This would lead to Donald hitting her so hard that she would become unconscious. Now, Patricia would reach for a 2x6, but unfortunately missed hitting him and was rewarded with a hit of the gun so hard that she would also be knocked out. It's so sad what went on afterwards. He would go on to rape both of the girls, and then he'd proceed to beat them to death. Now, I want you guys to remember this, because he would dispose of the bodies in two different locations. Patricia, he placed in a septic tank, and Janice behind a barn nearby where she lived. Now, this next victim is one he wasn't convicted of as well, as they'd already had someone behind bars. And it's not confirmed, and that's why it's not on the timeline, because we're just not sure that this one is actually true. About a month or so after Janice and Patricia's murders, he would claim that he raped, kidnapped, and murdered Margaret, nicknamed Peggy Curtino. Curtino. She happened to be a daughter of a senator, and she came from a fairly prominent family. So when she went missing, there were many suspects, including Donald, but he had an alibi. Now, it's not known now whether that was actually a true alibi. She was only 13 years old, and she was found 2 weeks after she'd gone missing in a wooded area near a highway. Now, this is very familiar to what he actually does, so I'm not entirely sure that it's not him. Now, an autopsy was performed, and the findings were that she'd been beaten and strangled, and she had possible cigarette burns on her body, and it was implied that she'd actually been held captive for a period of time. Now, this is where it just gets a little bit weird. Another suspect that the police were already aware of confessed. Now, he was already behind bars for another murder. His name's William Pierce, and he was a truck driver from Georgia. At the time that he confessed, there was no evidence to support yes or no, or whether he was guilty. But given that Peggy came from a prominent family, I would say that the police department had huge amounts of pressure to close this case and find the killer. So they just wanted it closed. So when William was sentenced to life, it's been suggested, though, that the only reason Donald confessed was for publicity and leniency on his death row conviction, a fact we will never really know. However, William was partial, the man who was convicted of Peggy's murder. He was partial to do these types of things. So Donald and William had similar backgrounds. Now, at the end of 1970, Donald's parole was now complete. So his condition of not being able to return to Florence was removed. Much good that did, considering he was still going to Florence when he wasn't meant to be. He'd marry for a fifth time this time, and she would actually have a son named Donald Lee Gaskins. So with all of this going on, the murders did stop for a little while. He would even get a real job that wasn't illegal for a period of time, but I think he got really bored of a mundane life because he really quickly returned to stripping and repainting stolen cars. Now, he really didn't stay away from murder for too long because that bothersome feeling would once again return and that voice telling him to kill. Now, he would claim during 1971, he killed 11 women along the coastal highway, and two of them happened to be two 16-year-old girls that had run away from home and they just wanted a ride to Florida. Our next victim on the timeline is what we're going to be discussing next. So while he was working at the garage, he'd meet his next victim of the serious murders, and this just happened to be his first African-American victim, 20-year-old Martha Dix, who also went by the nickname of Clyde. Now, for God knows what reason, she had a little bit of a crush on Donald, and she'd tell people that they were lovers. A very bad lie to tell, considering he was a closet racist and was disgusted by biracial relationships, and even worse, when they had babies. Clyde, she would take her lies too far one day, and it would cost her dearly, her life. Now, she claimed that Donald had knocked her up, and given his racism towards biracial relationships, this was not the brightest of moves, because he soon made a plan to kill her. He told her to meet him at his rental property, and he said that he had some pills for an abortion, not sure if she was pregnant or not. These pills would end up knocking Clyde out, and then Donald would handcuff her. Now, when she would awaken, she was beaten and forced to swallow more pills that would eventually cause her death, causing an overdose. Now, he would dump her body in a drainage ditch. Now, the next three murders, they're not on the timeline either, as these bodies have not been found, so it can't be confirmed. In late 1971, he would move his family to Charleston, where he would meet two of his alleged victims, Eddie and his wife, Bertie. Now, Donald had been selling guns to Eddie, and he got a little bit spooked when Eddie decided to tell him that federal agents were in the area and trying to find gun runners. Now, the fear of going back to jail kicked in again, and Donald would resort to killing once again. He would allegedly shoot them and bury them near his first victim, Janice. Yet the bodies weren't found. The last one is Jackie Freeman. Now, he claimed he picked her up hitchhiking. This would be the first time he'd ever mentioned that he delved into cannibalism with a side of rape. The Gaskins would move again in 1973 to Prospect after their house in Charleston burned down. I smell something fishy there. Now, we're going to go back to the timeline again. Doreen Dempsey and her two-year-old daughter, Robin. This just breaks my heart reading this one. For whatever reason suited him, Donald decided to buy a hearse. Wouldn't that just prove to be one of the most ominous things, though, ever? It even had a sign stating, "We haul anything, living or dead." Now, Doreen was a nearby neighbour, and he'd offer her a lift to the bus station. This would be a fatal flaw in accepting what she thought was a kind gesture. He drove them to a secluded wooded area where he raped Doreen in front of her little girl. He would rape and torture them both. He would kill Doreen with a hammer and strangle poor little Robin. Such a tragic ending for a mother and a daughter. Now, in 1974, he would change his method of killing with his next murder. 36-year-old Johnny Sellers owed Donald $1,000 and was taking his sweet dime to pay him back and giving some pretty lame excuses as to why he couldn't. It really, really infuriated Donald, and he decided to lure Johnny to the woods. Why the hell would you go to the woods with a man who you clearly know is mad at you? I do not know. He ended up shooting him, and fearing that the police would be able to easily connect Johnny, given that people knew of Donald's anger towards the money he owed, and also to try and stall an investigation, he decided to kill Johnny's girlfriend as well. So he called her up and he went to her house, stabbed her to death. He then took her body to the same woods where Johnny was and would bury her alongside him. Really, really odd. Like, there was no reason to kill the girlfriend, no reason to really kill Johnny, but I'm saying, like, she just happened to be there. Now, his wife would leave him at the end of 1974 and take his son with her. I think she could see the writing on the wall that something was wrong with her husband, as 1975 would prove to be one of the deadliest of years. Now, up until now, Donald had actually worked alone, and maybe that's why he really wasn't on the police's radar. But he'd soon be on the radar, as he would bring in a friend to help with cleanup and other dirty work that was required. He started the year out back on the coastal highway. A man and two women would be up this time. Again, not on the timeline, guys, because this is the coastal murders. He would offer them a lift to a nearby garage as their car had broken down. He would instead take them to a nearby swamp where he would hold them at gunpoint. He castrated the male and killed the two girls by drowning them after forcing them into a group sex, which I'm not sure. I'm going to allude to a gang rape, but I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure there was a lot more to it, but that's the most details that I could find. And the reason I do say there's more to it is that van was full of blood. Now, this brings us to Walter Neely, an ex-con friend of Donald's, and he would ask him for help cleaning and stripping and repainting the van owned by the three that he just killed. Donald would soon regret this choice to bring Walter in, as he would end up being the one squealing very loudly to the police. Now, his first murder for hire would be Silas Yates. He was hired by a former lover, Suzanne Kipper, and he would accept the job for $1,500. He would ask Diane Neely, his mate Walter's ex-wife, to assist by getting Yates out using the ruse that she had a broken down car and she needed assistance. Now, two more people would assist with this murder and regret it later, given they were sent to jail. There's John Powell and John Owens. Now, they acted as a go-between Donald and Susan when they were negotiating the deal to kill Silas. Susan and John Owens would actually marry later. Isn't that the biggest match made in hell? Now, Powell and Owens witnessed Donald stabbing Silas to death, and they actually helped him get rid of the body. Pee-wee would truly regret using Diane Neely in this contract to kill, though, because soon after the murder, she moved in with a gentleman by the name of Avery Howard, who knew Donald from prison. Very, very small world, apparently, this prison world. Now, Diane and Avery would come up with the brilliant idea to blackmail Donald for $5,000. Given they knew what he had just done, I'm not sure that either of them are the brightest bulbs. Well, you can imagine that this would be a fatal error in judgment for these two. He would agree to meet them and give them their money in the woods just outside of Prospect. Again, why would you meet a man who you know kills people in the woods? It just reads as a setup for me. But hey, they met him there. He'd already dug up their graves, shot them both on the spot, and covered them back up in the graves that he just built. Now, he was stupid enough to think that this was going to solve all his problems. His next victim, again, breaks my heart. She was just 13 years old, and her name was Kim. She had a similar death to the other girls: rape, torture, and strangulation, followed by being buried in the woods. The reason for her death is just Johnson, who spurned his She was just another person who spurned his advances, and it cost her life. He really didn't take rejection of women at all well. October 1975 would prove to be a bloody month with the death of Diane Neely's brother, Dennis Bellamy, and her half-brother, Johnny Knight, two people who also knew of Donald's prison experience, and yet they decided a good thing to do would be to steal from him. Another fatal error, if I've ever seen one. These two were shot. Johnny was shot in the back of his head, execution style. Walter, his trusty confidant, helped bury their bodies. And as a bonus, Donald showed him the rest of the bodies that were in the area. This would prove to be Donald's undoing, showing Walter his own private cemetery. Things were really heating up in October because Kim's parents knew of her association with Donald, and they'd long suspected him of doing something wrong to her because they'd known his past and they'd known what he'd done to Patsy. Now, a search warrant was issued to investigate his home. Now, upon entering the home and searching, they found in his apartment clothes belonging to Kim. He would soon be arrested for delinquency of a minor. As I said before, this is actually called statutory rape in our time. Now, they were unable to charge him without more evidence. Donald, at the time of his arrest, wasn't able to post bail. Now, this would give the police department ample opportunity to interview Walter Neely without any intimidation tactics from Donald. Now, but he was already the roommate who knew way too much, right? The police brought Walter down to the station and they placed a lot of pressure on him. The floodgates didn't take too long to open though, right? Quickly, Walter was telling them everything he knew. He would show them Gaskin's private cemetery in Prospect, and the police would eventually find the bodies of Johnny Sellers, Jesse Judy, Avery Howard, Diane Neely, Johnny Knight, Donna Spallini, Doreen Dempsey, and her little girl, Robin. To be fair, Donald also actually helped them find the bodies, as he knew he was in trouble when they had told him that Walter had broken already. So the police department now had what they needed to charge Donald. They did also charge Walter. Now, Donald would actually remark on the month that he was arrested. The coroner had the bodies, Jesus had Walter, and the law had me. Interesting fact. Now, once the coroner had confirmed and verified everything Walter had told them was true, they actually ended up charging him with 8 counts of murder. In May 1976, the trial was a really quick one. It took them no less than 4 days for a jury to convict Donald of the murder of Dennis Bellamy. Initially, he was only charged with 1 murder, guys. You'll soon find out about the other 7. Now, he'd be sentenced to death. Now, here comes the twist. In November 1976, the death sentence was invalidated by the US Supreme Court in South Carolina's death penalty statute. It's not sure. I couldn't find any evidence as to why this happened. But as a result, his capital sentence was commuted to a life sentence instead. Now, in December of this same year, 1976, Silas Yates' body was found, and this would lead to another murder charge. But knowing he wasn't facing the death sentence this time, Donald would end up taking the stand and confessing to all the murders he'd been accused of, and then some. His sentence was life. Now, just 2 weeks after the trial had ended for Silas, Martha Hicks' body was found. Now, Donald still had those pesky 7 other charges of murder pending. And with South Carolina passing a new death sentence penalty, his attorneys told him to cut a deal to prevent the death sentence happening. I think he was also afraid that they'd tack on more murder charges. So that's why he copped to the deal and he only received 7 other life sentences. He got off way too easy, if you ask me. He really, really did. He'd later confessed to more murders such as Janice Kirby, Patricia Allsbrook, Martha Hicks, and Kim Gelkins, but he was never charged or convicted in relation to those. I honestly have no idea why that happened, guys. It's just what I've been able to find. Now, prison was a bit too easy for Donald this time around. He was a big man, and it was a relatively cruisy experience for him, because now he had the reputation as a ruthless serial killer, which apparently earned him a bucket load of respect from other inmates. I really don't understand prison dynamics, but I don't really understand the hierarchy. But I'm guessing because you're a known murderer, makes you pretty high up on the food chain. Now, for this very last murder, it earned him his second death sentence. And that just seems like an icing on a cake of an already despicable human being. In 1981, he would actually agree to another hit. He agreed to kill death row inmate Rudolf Tyner. He was hired by his mate Tony Chemo or Simo. Now, there was a little backstory as to why. Rudolf had killed Bill and Myrtle Moon during a robbery gone bad. What Tony had not told Donald was that Myrtle was his mum, and he downright wanted revenge. Now, Donald would use explosives to kill Rudolf, and he would befriend him and rig a device similar to a portable radio where he told his new friends that they could use these to chat. Once Rudolf had the device, it exploded as soon as it was brought to his ear. I imagine that would have been one of the most grisly of scenes. Now, he was soon charged and indicted with murder. Now, the warden would move him to an area what they called the dungeon, and the only human contact that Donald ever had was twice a week when he was allowed to have a shower. It's been reported that the guards would beat him severely. 3 years of appeals, and he would still be sentenced to death. He would sit on death row for another 6 years, and in those final years, he'd work with an author to create his memoir, The Final Truth, The Autobiography of a Serial Killer. He would tell his life story through a recorder and give that to Wilton. I think a lot of what he said was embellished, but I really don't know, and we're obviously never going to really know. In an article that I read, it also said that 2 weeks before he became the 245th South Carolina prisoner to die in the electric chairs, he plotted with his son to kidnap the then three-year-old daughter of then Columbia area solicitor Dick Harpootillion, whose prosecution moved Gaskins from a life sentence to his own date with death. I cannot think of a sicker individual that would bring his son into a scheme, let alone a three-year-old little girl. Like, just what is wrong with you? Now, on his last night, he slashed his wrists in the crooks of his arms with a razor blade that he lodged in his throat and regurgitated. It took 20 stitches to save him. He would be electrocuted in the electric chair at 1:10 a.m. on September 6, 1991. For me, it couldn't have happened to a more sick person. The world's better off without him in it. I'm not saying his life was easy by any stretch of the imagination, and I've watched some really interesting documentaries which features his daughter. Evil lives here. She genuinely loved him. So I think there must have been some kindness in order for him to love him the way she does and to still speak so kindly of him. Anyway, guys, that's the end of part two. So please go and comment on this episode and tell me what you think. And if there's anything else you'd like me to add, please like and hit the subscribe button. Now, I am going to be hosting a competition. So you'll need to make sure that you follow the episode on Halloween. Goodbye, my fellow peanuts. And until next time.